Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported nonprofit food radio station. That means that every single thing we do, from broadcasting 35 weekly shows for free, to bringing you exclusive content from sold-out food events across the country, to offering scholarships to high school students, is only possible thanks to the support of our loyal members. And we want you to join the club. Become a member during our 2017 summer drive to get access to sweet swag and pledge your support to the world's only food radio station. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member now.
How do two ladies write, date, and express themselves in Trump's America? Have the inner workings of our minds and souls changed in the last few months? Author Jen Dahl returns for the second show in our Me and You series. It's Monday, June 26th, and this is Love Bites Radio. Welcome to Love Bites, coming at you live from Heritage Radio Network. I'm one of your hosts, Jacqueline Raposo. I'm 35, single, and you can find me as @WordsFoodArt.
And I'm your other host, Jen Dahl. I am currently in a relationship, and you can find me as @ThisIsJenDahl.
Welcome back, Jen.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yay. So listeners, you may have noticed that Jen is not Ben. This is me and you.
Close. One letter off.
Exactly. It worked out quite conveniently. This is the second in our Me and You series. Last week, it was Jax and Ben. Today, it is Jax and Jen. Works out quite well for me right now. Ben is on his way in the air to Portland, Oregon, back where he was a few months ago to workshop his play at the Portland Center stage right now. So Jen is guest hosting today, and today we are talking about being lady writers in Trump's America, which is Jen's brilliant idea for our Me and You topic today, which I'm a little stressed out about just even saying that name. I don't even normally say that name. I call him 45.
I also don't want to call it Trump's America because I'm like, no, it's our
America.
It's
not his America.
Yeah.
I know.
We get
I know.
The
it
idea.
Made for it made for a
yes.
title.
Right.
It
exactly.
made for a title.
No, it's necessary.
Yeah. So listeners, in this series, it's just a host, in this case, two hosts like it was last week, but basically two people, five questions, two halves of a show, and we interview each other. So we are going to rock, paper, scissor to see who asks first.
I can remember how to do this. Okay.
So yeah, so we do rock, paper, scissor, shoot, and whoever wins gets to decide whether they ask or answer first. Okay?
Okay.
All right, ready? Rock, paper, scissor, shoot. I win again.
Oh, you win. Okay.
So I'm going to ask you
great
questions first.
Okay.
So, all right, so here we go. So I get to sit back and relax. So Miss Jen Dahl. So listeners, just so you know, Jen, you penned a memoir a few years ago.
Yes.
You are an essayist and you are active and hilarious on Twitter.
Thank you.
That's just sort of a general get to know Jen Dahlish for listeners who have not heard you on our round table episode in December.
Right.
That we had our Single and Fabulous Ladies Who Lunch. Well, I don't remember what we called it. Single and Fabulous, the best.
Yeah. And we ladies. We didn't lunch.
I don't remember. We drank.
We
and it was fun.
Lunched.
It was cold and delightful. I loved it. So that's what Jen does. And in what way has Mr. 45 most like shifted your creative work and your productivity? Do you feel like more or less focused?
Oh my God.
Like, has it changed the pieces that you write? And like, how do you navigate the opinions that you get back in your work?
I really hate it, but I think that it's changed absolutely everything. And I don't hate that because we needed to change. Like, in some way, this has been kind of a wake up call about what's really important.
Totally. In what way for you is it the most wake up call?
I think that we have never really gotten to a place where, like, I feel we should be as the sort of good and just and, you know,
yeah, like we thought like, we were further
like,
along.
Like
than
we thought
were.
We were further along, and maybe there were the trappings of being further along, but suddenly everything is threatened, and it just feels like at first doing creative work, like any creative work at all, just felt impossible. My therapist says that that is a very normal reaction to trauma. So anyone who felt that way after November 8th, the date that will live in infamy.
I know, it's like the black hole I'm trying to
repress. Yeah. Anyone who felt like, I think a lot of writers, a lot of creative people were feeling like, how do I channel my energy? I mean, if I even have it
anything, right?
Like I was going to try to write a piece about hobbies. Do we even have hobbies anymore? And then suddenly after Trump was elected, it was like, who fucking cares about hobbies?
Yeah.
You know, like, no, we need to be out there protesting. We need to be doing things. We need to be focusing on what is really important now because it feels much more threatened. And I think that's energizing on a level, but it's also, you know, really tiring. And how do you take your creative energy and put it into that sort of place? The other thing was, I was thinking, I need to be doing protests. I need to be like fighting. But when then do you have time to write?
Right.
So kind of like a rebalancing of all of those things.
And how did that change your work? The pieces that you did or?
Yeah, well, the hobbies piece died. I just didn't feel like I could write it. I wrote things that were about how I was coping, which I felt like I hoped they could have a kind of universal appeal because everybody was going through, you know, similar feelings, a lot of people, or some kind of, you know, this was like a major thing that happened to our country.
Totally.
So whatever you feel, I think it would be very hard, like before the show started, like the weirdest thing would be feeling absolutely nothing, like nothing has changed. And I think we do feel like things have changed. So I'm also working on a young adult novel right now. And to me, young adult novels are one of the most progressive, strong, like beautiful places to put energy and spirit and like goodness, because teenagers are the best people in the world. And we want to provide them with the skills to like they are our future. They're the ones who are gonna hopefully help fix this for us, or at least like we're not gonna destroy the world too much so that they so that they still have a place to live. So I've been really busy revising that novel and working a little bit less on essays for websites and stuff like that, just in terms of time management.
Did you find that getting to work on your novel and infusing it with those, you know, empowering, strengthening sort of moral codes, did that help you, or did that shift at all in what you want, in the message you wanted to put in your...
Yes. I think it became stronger. I always wanted that to be... It's a huge part of the novel, but I just felt like much more like this is how it needs to be, and this is the kind of message that I need to have.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting to see, like, in 2018 and 19, the stories that come.
Yes.
I think from right now.
Totally. Yeah. And I think everyone has been affected. All people who are doing creative work.
Right.
It's hard to not have suddenly infuse what you're doing.
Yeah. So how did this change specifically your Twitter presence? Because like I said, you were very funny on Twitter.
I actually felt like really bad about Twitter for a while.
Like, no, that's the thing. Because Twitter, it's like a landmine. It's like you can't, it's, to me, it's just depressing. Like that's the one thing that I vacate from more than anything else. So like, how do you navigate, you know, that with the same sort of like you're very wry.
I mean,
it's like
sometimes
an observational comedy, you know, like how do you do it?
Right. Sometimes to me, Twitter at its best is a place where you can just have like hilarious things that you're seeing happen in life and you can remark upon. And then it's valuable for getting information out, you know, about like political causes and things like that we care deeply about. And it's valuable for disseminating good articles to read. But for me, the like stress relief part of Twitter is like like this morning I was on a train and I was coming back from upstate, and this guy next to me is like going on and on and on and on to his mom about this wedding that he was just at, describing it in the most intricate detail, like every level, and like he was just commenting on everything and speaking very loudly, and I like had to tweet about it because it's just hilarious. like it was like talking about how some woman there was just a total knockout, and like how he would die to date her, and why was she even, yeah, and to his mother, and you know, I think stereotypically it's like women are the ones talking about weddings. No, this dude was like deeply engaged in this wedding. So that was hilarious. Aww. And that's the kind of thing, I don't know, like we have to still live our lives, you know, right. We have to see the things around us that make us human, and both flawed and hateable and flawed and lovable, you know?
Right. Like, well, speaking of such roller coasters, when you were on the show in December, you were dating somebody, and then I saw you a couple months later and you were single, and now you were dating somebody again.
Yes.
And I feel like this whole election, that just everything right now, I feel like, I don't know about you, but I felt like the election was like a box to my vagina. Like I just felt like everything was like, women, just fuck off. Like, yeah, you're just go back down. And I think a lot of women. Just,
right. And also then like, men, fuck off, because you don't deserve to have any access to any of this.
Yeah. Like, it was, yeah, just, it was just, it just,
yeah.
So, I mean, so you're dating somebody.
Yes.
How has this barf bubble of a world affected that, like, these men that you've been with in this period between? And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So when I had my breakup, I was like, the bodega grates are down. Like, there's no, I don't want to think about men. I don't want to, like, in my view, men, including this person that I was dating, were part of this whole, like, destruction of beauty and goodness, and you know, and even if they weren't actively perpetrating all of this badness, they were part of it because they were complicit in it, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Anyway, then I met this guy, and it's always nice, it's a nice reminder that like you meet people and you're like, oh, huh, I could date someone again, maybe. Like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then, like, the grates began to rise. And also, you know, there were, like, issues that I'd had in my previous relationships, and particularly in the very last one, that this person, I mean, I think I'm just, like, so much more aware, like, that they be politically aligned with me, that they are a staunch feminist, that they care deeply about, you know, progressive ideals.
Could you project that this brought, that the political climate brought it out in your current gentleman, that it just like,
I helped? Think he was always like that, but I think he just like could talk about it more. So, and also I was asking more questions like that, because I think that before maybe a lot of things were under the surface that we just didn't address or deal with, or because we didn't feel like we had to.
Right. Yeah.
And then it became so raw that it was like, oh no, like,
right,
you're a libertarian. You know, like right, these are red flags. These right, are bad.
So you don't vote in the primary?
Yes. You right, didn't, you didn't vote at all. Right. Like,
yeah.
Like it, that goes from being sort of like, to like,
right,
you're maybe the devil.
Right.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I think one of the positive things about what's happening now is that there's a possibility that we could have like a real comeback for nice guys and for like good guys, because I don't think anyone wants to sleep with a bad one right now. I mean,
yeah,
not even for
I love
one
I
night.
I love that. Good guys out there, I high five you for that, because yeah. Yeah, a lot. Like, I think good people right now are just, it's just a general rise up to like,
and we should have valued them before.
Yeah, totally. So tell me a story about love you've seen in your life since November, whether it's family or friends, something about getting it, losing it, you know, whatever, like, something you've learned about a big love, like feelings, lessons that could only have happened now in this type of, in this America.
Yes. Interesting. This is a hard question. I think that So I've been talking to my therapist a lot, like a lot of
a lot of people have. Yeah.
And this kind of like dovetailed with my breakup, and I wrote a little bit about this on the website Cup of Joe, but my therapist was like, you need to say what you want. You need to put it out there. And I'm like, well, what do I even want? You know, like, how do you know what you want? Because I think I've been living my life thinking I could want this and I could want this. And both of those things could be great. And how do you even decide until you start experiencing it? But really putting things out there and saying, like, this is definitely what I do want is empowering and great. Yeah. And so I made a list, and then I met someone, and it's like, it sounds like The Secret. It sounds like complete bullshit, but but
did you list the things that you wanted in that person?
Not okay. So the things I wanted were like an arrow, someone who is straight and true and sweeps through the sky with a direction. Yeah. And my therapist is like, whoa, you're a loony.
No, I'm like taking notes over here. I'm like, okay.
But so. I decided that arrows, like, so people are arrows, or maybe they're like, I don't know, kites, and then they waft in the wind and they go where, but I wanted someone who had their own internal direction.
Right.
I mean, obviously we can go into more arrow technology and like it's, there's a bow and whatever, but like, let's not do that. My metaphor works for me. Anyway, I think had I not experienced this, like, this breakup and this kind of, like, deep disappointment where someone who I thought was aligned with me turned out to not be aligned with me, and then the America that I thought was aligned with me turned out to be not aligned with me, I think I wouldn't have sort of, like, reconstituted in that way and thought enough about this to then really be open to meeting someone else who was this directioned person.
Right. Oh, I love that. I love that.
And then another brief story is that I've just been fighting with my dad a lot. Like, oh my but God. I love him anyway.
That's so hard. All right. So,
You know, dads of a certain generation. My dad did not vote for Trump, but he has some beliefs that are much more of, you know, like he was born in the 40s and he's not sure about protests, even though he lived through the Vietnam War. And
how do you talk to him about it?
Well, drunkenly. And we had a lot of fights. And then we've kind of like, actually, the last time he saw me, he was like, my liberal. And I was like, okay, that's not cool, dude. Yeah. But he and I, like, you know how everyone was like, how do you talk to your family members that,
right.
that don't get
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I think you do have to keep talking to them, unfortunately. I don't know. Mm. And my dad does get it. He just doesn't get it exactly the way that I want him to get it.
Right.
Which maybe a 70-year-old man isn't going to do, you know?
Right.
And
yeah.
But you love these people in your life anyway.
Right.
It's like, I'm not cutting out my dad just because
right.
he's not protesting.
Yeah. Ouch. Ugh. Yeah. All right. So we're going to take a break, and Jen is going to tell you a little bit, as my co-host for the day, she is going to talk to you about our summer membership drive, and then when we come back, we're going to talk more about this world that we're in. So Jen,
then
why don't you tell
our listeners?
Yeah. I'm chewing on your words right now and thinking about how I'm going to respond to a similar idea. So Jen, tell our listeners some stuff.
Yes, ma'am. Before we take a break, a reminder that all of our 70-plus episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher, and at heritageradionetwork.org, and that we are only here because Heritage is a member-supported station. Our summer membership drive is in full effect, and we need our listeners to join us as card-carrying members, too. Just head to heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart in the upper right corner, and select a one-time or recurring package that looks right for you. We have limited edition summer member thank you gifts right now, and you'll be on the list for members-only events. Thank you for helping us keep excellent food and lifestyle radio on the air this summer. We're always available to you as at Love Bites Radio on social and via email at lovebites@heritageradionetwork.org. We will love you forever for supporting our work and our team. And now we'll be right back.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Okay, we're back.
Hello.
Hello. It's my turn. Whenever you're ready, Jen.
All right. I have many questions for you, but we'll start with this one.
Okay.
You spent a year looking at habit removal. During that time, we elected a president who might embody a kind of, well, might. He definitely embodies a kind of grotesque excess. And in a way, we can't even say no to him because he's like penetrating every pore, you know, TV, radio, like
everywhere.
Twitter, social media. Like we hear about him on the streets. How have you handled that in your year of being mindful and considering what you take in and what you say no to? And did it help that you had this kind of abstinence program underway, or was it more challenging to be abstinent after the election?
Yeah, like, so listeners, last week I talked a little bit about my project, My Year of Abstinence. So it's myyearofabstinence.com, which has nothing to do with sexual abstinence, but the project and the election immediately clashed because on November 4th, I went off of sugar, which included fruit and included alcohol. So, and then 4 days later, we had the election, and in no way did I expect him to win. And so I was right at home by myself because I knew that I couldn't be drinking and partying with people. And I was like, I'm going to make tea and light candles. And all of a sudden I was like, I cannot drink and I cannot eat a brownie and I cannot like, and I couldn't do anything. And so I just watched and I hurt. And then.
And you were able to prevent yourself from going to any of those.
I almost broke.
Yeah.
I almost broke. It was like, as I was watching the numbers change, I was like that SNL sketch of the white people being like, maybe she can, maybe if it's just this and that. I was like crunching numbers in my head and I was looking at the bar. I was like, I can make a martini. I have whiskey. Uh-huh. I have like the bottle of champagne in the fridge that I was waiting for the 30 days later to like, yes, toast Hillary. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I've got a lot of self-discipline and I was ready to break and I didn't.
That is amazing.
And I didn't. And then a couple days later, the guy I was seeing ended things with me. And so it was, mm-hmm, a really shitty month. But I faced the darkness of a really bad time, and it got really dark with everything that was happening and not being able to drink my way through it or band-aid my way through it. Mm-hmm. It was one of the darkest periods I've ever had in my life, mm-hmm, but it did then change what I picked for my January challenge, as, mm-hmm, I called them, which was identifying my anxieties, identifying my negative thoughts and flipping them and like coming up with tools. I did power poses. I made up this thing called Tell a Wonder Woman, which if you just go into Year of Abstinence, it's hard to explain, but if you go into yearofabstinence.com and you just click on the category, so I channeled Michelle Obama and Wonder, uh-huh, Woman and Carrie Fisher and, uh-huh, my best friend and my dog. And so anytime I could identify that I was going to a panic attack,
wow,
I would channel the strength of these women, these five different strengths, and it helped. And, uh-huh, so like these two things were colliding where, over time, I realized that it was more vital for me to do this for myself, to like strengthen and empower myself and to face my darkness. And it started affecting my moral compass. Like, mm-hmm, I grew genuinely stronger and I, mm-hmm, grew, and I now have tools, mm-hmm, that no matter what's happening and when I feel weak and lost, that I can tap in, that I can see it and I can face whatever it is like that still happens and I can get myself out of the darkness. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I see it everywhere of people not being able to control themselves, right, and take a breath.
Right.
And I'm so thankful in a way that I had that no sugar thing and I couldn't drink and I couldn't band-aid myself that I had to face my shit.
Mm-hmm. Have you had a drink since?
Yes, but my tolerance is so down. Like I have these glasses at home where I have 4 ounces of wine and, uh-huh, I'm like happy and,
wow,
done. Like I'm
That's
two
great.
Glasses. I'm two glasses of wine now and I'm done.
That's really impressive.
Yeah.
You just mentioned that you had a breakup as well in all of this time.
Yeah.
And this was a question you had for me, but right. I'd like to ask it back to you. How has Trump's America changed your dating life? Are you dating now? Do you want to be? Do you feel like you have? Are you looking for something different now? Do you find it easier just to say no to men? Have you shut down the bodega grades?
I think it's definitely, I think both of these things together, again, between like the political stuff and the abstinence project, I know myself better, and it's definitely made it harder overall that I just I am dating. The guy I talked about last week, I'm not dating this week, which I'm feeling good about, though,
which is great,
because in the course of the last year I've identified my beliefs are stronger, the things I enjoy about life, I'm happier, and the people I spend time with and the things that I choose to do, I have fewer habits and a lot more choices in my life.
Yeah.
And so like, if it doesn't feel good, like I want men, I love the image that you gave of the arrow.
Yes.
you know, because like, I just find it harder to find men who are as strong and centered. Like I've been using this idea of like this moral compass now. Like I want a guy who's, I'm going to enjoy as much as I enjoy my friends, and as much as I love my solitude. I love the time, and I own the things that I like more now.
Yeah.
I'm open to so many things about a guy's personality, but like, I'm not gonna settle. And I hate the word settle, but I'm not going to.
I think what you said before we were even on the air was so powerful, and like gets rid of that gross word that feels like it's like,
it feels mean to
say shaming,
settle.
Kind of, you know, like,
I'm not going to settle for a man who
Yeah. There's something about settle, like, and that also women should all just take someone who wants them.
Right.
Well, no, there's more to it than that. But you said all of these other things in my life are great. Why would I want to include someone in that, or like make time for someone who isn't also great and who isn't sort of adding to my life? You know, I mean, the beautiful thing about a great relationship is you're adding to their life and they're adding to your life.
Like,
and it's really fun and feels empowering and supportive and like all of these wonderful things. If it's not doing that.
Right. And like, I want to do that for somebody and have that somebody do that for me. But I only want it if it's symbiotic for both of us.
Totally.
You know? And if it's not, I've got like, so much good going on. And so I think like, as far as like the political place where we are, like I feel stronger in who I am because of both of these things. And I've got just less time to waver. I think that's part of what I feel like that's part of what the climate has done for a lot of women, is that we're not so indecisive comparatively.
Right. And if someone reveals himself to be a jerk, kind of like first thing, you're like, no,
I
don't even need to bother with that.
Exactly.
Less apology. Too much of that already.
Yeah, completely. Completely.
Have you found relationships with friends and family members to be challenging or changing following the election?
Yeah. And I think, some family members have been really hard, and I think, and I can't get too specific in it because of how hard some of them have been.
Yeah.
But I think the hard lesson has been that I realized that, like, so my job, I interview people more than anything as a writer and on this show. And I really, and I'm a listener, and I love listening to people's stories. And also it makes me happy to just listen to people. And I think I've realized with all of the horrible words coming out of people so easily and the judgments, like, I don't use mean words on people.
Right.
I don't use demeaning words on people. I don't use inhuman words on other human beings. And I've realized that I can't change or fix those things about the loved ones in my lives, but I still love them.
Yes.
And so I don't, like, we're all anomalies. We all have good and bad about us. And I've just learned some bad things about the people I've loved, and I've learned some amazing things about strangers. And so I'm trying to just sort of hold on to the beautiful things I've learned from strangers. And I've honestly, like, I've done I think the opposite of what you've done. Like, I haven't talked to, because I don't have the capacity to have those. I'm not good with conflicted conversations. Like, I'm not a good debater. I don't like fighting. And so I found with those relationships, it's been more powerful for me to take space and refuse to be in the same space with people.
I mean,
that's made more of a statement to the specific people in my life for me to not be around.
Yes. I think that's as powerful, sometimes more powerful. I have a habit of, I'm very friendly with conflict. And I don't mind going in, but you know, sometimes silence is really the most powerful and the healthiest thing for you to do too.
Yeah. That's what I've needed for me. Like my mom last weekend called me the peacemaker in the mm-hmm. family. And so if I'm not around, it sort of means that you've crossed a line mm-hmm. that is, if I can't fix it,
yeah,
then you can't, you know,
then, and maybe people need to take time yeah. to think what they're doing themselves. Hopefully.
That's my hope yeah. anyway, because I can't do anything else about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah.
What is next after the abstinence project for you? That was a whole year.
It was. And honestly, I don't know. Like, I, even towards the end, I was like, I don't know what else to take out because I sort of feel so in the moment right now. Like,
is there anything else you can take out?
Yeah. Like, I mean, the last thing I did was like 40 days of changing something up every day. And yeah. so there's definitely some things that I want to try more of. Like, I want to do again. Like, and I want to do more from a journalistic perspective. Like, I did one day of no electricity.
Uh-huh.
And I want to do that again, like, but outside of New York City.
Uh-huh.
And I did one day of not cleaning up after myself to try to see what dirt, like messy people are like, because I'm such a neat freak. But I want to research more about like the healthy part of being a messy person.
Letting yourself go a little bit.
Yeah. And like, and interviewing people who consider themselves slobs to mm-hmm. find out how it emotionally makes them feel. And then try to apply that mental aspect to it, because I was not happy. I was like mm-hmm. very unhappy. And my mm-hmm. day was not good, and I was behind all day, and I was like angry when I got home. So like, I want to sort of do more of the intellectual side of some of the stuff
that's
that I
fascinating.
Did. Mm-hmm. So that's probably it. Like, yeah. it's just, you know, so we'll see.
Is there any Trump component to this? Like, did you take a break from Twitter? You did, right?
That was the first thing, was like yeah. 40 days. And I still do that
a lot.
That was in the beginning. That was before mm-hmm. that was before the politics.
Yeah.
And I do that now. Sometimes I take weekends off from it, and I do especially with Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And social media is still the hardest thing out of yeah. everything I did. Like, that's the only thing that I feel like I still have a problem with is social media.
I think it's also particularly hard. I'm going a little bit off the question list right now, but like, when you're a person who is a writer or is a creative person, and part of your job is promoting yourself. So how do you cut yourself off of social media, which is functionally something yeah. you need to promote yourself?
Well, and one thing that actually did get more complicated for me during, because of the political climate, which I think is great for other people, is the idea of identity,
mm-hmm.
where I feel like with activism, a lot of people found their role as activists. And in a way I did, I became more active in the chronic illness community. I founded the Marching With Me campaign,
mm-hmm.
which connects people with disability and chronic illness with what we call boots on the ground marchers at protests and rallies. But I still but there also became a lot of conflict online within communities, yes. within marginalized communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like there's conflict with the words chronic illness and spoonies and disabled. And I'm half Portuguese. My father is an immigrant, but nobody looks at me, but people obviously think I'm white and mm-hmm. I'm not Latina. So I'm not allowed to really identify with the Hispanic community, even though I live within the Hispanic mm-hmm. community in Washington Heights. And like,
mm-hmm.
I'm not really a chronic illness writer, but I do write about it. So mm-hmm. So I'm not really within that community, but I sort of am. So it's almost convoluted my yeah. identity, which I don't care about as a human
being, but as a writer and an online presence, all of our identities are convoluted, and that's what makes this time also hard,
right? And because, I feel like online that's
yeah.
weird, but in life I don't care in life but online yeah. it's a whole other thing.
Well, something that happens when we have this like very under nuanced black and white kind of president and
right.
presidency is that we react in this way that has to be one thing or the other as
right.
well.
And life isn't like that.
And people aren't
yeah.
like that. And I find that a struggle.
Yeah. So my online identity is definitely confusing. Whereas as a human, I feel clearer than ever.
Which is maybe, I mean, if you had to give one up.
That's
like,
true.
Right.
Yeah. I would totally walk away from online world completely if I could.
So this kind of gets at the last question, which is, how are you staying positive when the world feels like occasionally it's falling apart or always falling apart around us? What coping techniques have you adopted? What are some of the things that make you happy every day?
I only do things that make me happy every day outside of work. I mean, work is work. I mostly do projects that
mm-hmm.
I love, and I try to make sure that I'm in a good mood when I work, because mm-hmm. I'm a bitch to people as a freelance writer when I'm not. I can mean via email. And so I try to make sure I'm only in a good mood when I work.
Mm-hmm.
But that was another great convenient thing about doing this project this year, is that I read the books I like to read. I read a lot of morally grounded writers this year. I read Anne of Green Gables, almost the whole series, and uh-huh. Little Women, uh-huh. and a lot of magical realism, and I go for a lot of walks with my dog, and I go to the library, and I know a lot of people in my neighborhood, and I date when it feels good, and I stop when it doesn't. And I feel like coloring in a coloring book, I do it until I realize I'm not having fun, you know, like, and if I want to watch like 12 episodes of Younger, which I'm doing right now, like mm-hmm. I do it. And so like, I think the biggest thing right now is just recognizing what I want to do yeah. and doing it, and then recognizing if I'm not having fun and then stopping. And I go to food events that I want to go to for mm-hmm. work.
You're being your own arrow.
I'm being my own arrow. See, so it's like I decide if I would rather do this or rather do that, and yeah. that's it. Yeah. It's just deciding what I want to do and only doing things that make me happy.
I mean, that's fantastic.
And having no shame. And yes. So that's what I think people should do. Things that make them happy, and own it and be proud of it and don't apologize for it, as long as you're not hurting somebody, obviously. Yeah.
Right.
You know, and right. just choose happiness.
Yeah.
And, you know,
as much as you can.
No matter who is in that frickin' house. So we're going to quickly wrap up with Would You Rather. This is our game for this series. Would you rather this or that? So we have three very quick questions, and we're just going to ask each other if you would rather do this or rather do that. So I have my first question for you, Miss Jen.
Yes.
And they're just delightful. So would you rather sit down for pizza at Roberta's with Mr. President or have dinner with the Obamas, but during coffee accidentally spill blisteringly hot coffee on Michelle? Which would you rather?
I would still rather eat with the Obamas. I don't think I could possibly.
I know, right?
No. Even though Roberta's pizza is really good, too.
I know. But yeah. Okay.
And she would be wonderful.
She'd be so
about
gracious
it.
About it. She'd, yes. she'd feel bad.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. What do you got? We're going to go back and forth here.
Should I ask you a goofy one or a. Would you rather marry for love or health insurance?
Oh my God. Right now I just reapplied for my health insurance and backdated it. So right now in this very moment, I would get married for health insurance.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Same. I mean, ideally both.
But. Ideally both. Of course. Of course. But right now in this moment, considering like I've just spent a week going back and forth trying to get health insurance back and I really need it. Like I just paid my prescriptions out of pocket. So right now in this moment today, Monday the 26th, I would marry somebody for health insurance.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Number two, would you rather date a Trump voter or date a climate change denier?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, that's a hard one.
Well, would the Trump voter be... Would the Trump voter believe in climate change?
Yes.
And would the Trump voter be an abashed Trump voter or a no, Trump is still the way?
I don't know. You have to... You can make that decision.
I think I just would like not date forever.
No, you have to pick one. You have to pick one.
The Trump voter.
Oh, I know, right?
It's horrible.
I know. That's a really horrible unfair. Question. I know.
But you can't be a climate change denier.
I know.
I'm sorry.
I know you can't, right?
Would you rather give up reading books, paper, printed material, etc., or the internet?
Oh, the internet. I'd rather give up the internet. I could not give up reading paper books. Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, that would be such a good life if I could give up reading the internet.
It kind of sounds lovely.
I know, it sounds wonderful. Okay, last one. Would you rather ghostwrite Melania's scathing tell-all and make huge money, like enough, like you're set for life, or? Well, I guess this is not as fun now that I'm saying. Or write an amazing novel that is very well received. It's like the great American novel. It's well received, but you only get middling money and career advancement.
Yeah, the middling one.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. actually, no, that was a pretty good question now that I think about it. Because you gotta, like, I'm talking about like set for life money.
Right. Well, so like, yeah, the question is like
what
like, kind of writer do you want to be, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, see, I think I would pick the money.
Yeah.
I think I'm
could
like
you
that.
Write any other books after that?
Yeah.
Well, maybe. Yeah. But I'm already marrying for health insurance, so.
And that's all that really matters right now.
No, so I'm fine.
In Trump's America. Yeah.
All right. Let's see.
See, she came so prepared. I just came with three. She came with.
Okay. Would you rather go without dating at all until you find the perfect person or date a variety of people and maybe never find the one, but find lots of them and have good experiences with them all?
No, I would rather not date and just meet the one. I'm done. I have no idea how much I've dated.
You have no idea how much I've dated. The poor guy I just dated was like a year out of marriage and is like pie in the sky. And like, thank God I didn't get to the point where I had to tell him how much experience I have comparatively. I would be fine not dating. And then 10 years from now, going on one day and being like,
that could happen, maybe.
It could happen. I would be fine with that. I got a good life. I got stuff going on. Jen, thank you so much for joining me today. That is our show. Listeners, you can find my co-host Jen Dahl at jendahl.com. Is that correct? Or is this is Jen Dahl? It's just Jen Dahl.
Jendahl.com is my website.
Jendahl.com. Yep. And she is at This Is Jen Dahl on social media.
Yep.
And if you are a lady right there out there exploring identity and action in this America, we would love to hear how you handle it. So you can email me your thoughts at lovebites@heritageradionetwork.org or connect with us. We are at Love Bites Radio on all platforms. We are off for the 4th of July next week, so we wish you a healthful celebration and safe resistance if you are out there protesting. And I will be back on the 10th with another Me and You story to share. Until then, thank you to our guest engineer, Mike, out there in the booth. Our theme song is Give Love by Josh Dion. We are Jacqueline Raposo and Jen Dahl, and Love Bites will be back at the same time in 2 weeks right here at heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.